Chapter 16.
I like the way you guys travel, Dawkins said as he settled into the beige leather swivel chair on the port side of the beach craft. They were on their way back to Virginia. Is it safe to guess that our friends at a half dozen federal agencies would not be thrilled with the contents of the cargo hold?
Don't wear out your welcome until after we take off,
Boxer said as he passed by on his way to the flight deck.
We're prepared for most eventualities, Jonathan said. Let's just leave it at that.
10 minutes later, they were airborne, and 10 minutes after that, they leveled out at their cruising altitude.
We don't have flight attendant service, Jonathan said, but help yourself to whatever you want. There's a bar up front. The lavatory is in the rear of this cabin. Beyond that is my personal cabin, and you're not allowed in there.
Dawkins made a show of spinning his chair on the swivel. This is pretty damn cool.
You don't get to fly on Uncle Sam's executive jets?
Gale asked. He laughed.
I haven't had the opportunity to fly on the big boys, Air Force One and its brothers, but ones I have been on are what you might call functional. Better than commercial coach, but not a lot.
Dawkins rose from his chair and reached into the storage bin along the bulkhead to withdraw his briefcase.
Do you guys have AV capabilities on this bird?
Gale and Jonathan shared a smile. They were both recovering Luddites, almost entirely dependent on others for technology that was not mission-specific.
Depends on what you're looking for, Jonathan said.
Dawkins pointed to the television screen on the bulkhead.
I have a video I want to share from my laptop.
Jonathan gave two thumbs up.
That we can do.
He stood to help and led the two strides to the pull-down desk under the television screen.
All your hookups are there against the bulkhead. You've got power and whatever else you need. You know how to hook it up yourself?
I do.
Jonathan got out of his way and returned to his seat on the starboard side, opposite Gale.
What are we going to see?
Dawkins concentrated on what he was doing as he answered,
I thought you'd like to know what kind of people the Kendalls are.
On video?
Gale asked.
Bizarre, isn't it? Dawkins said. We scooped this up with a lot of other crap hauled out of a dealer's house in Port Arthur, Texas.
What does it show?
You'll have to see it to believe it, Dawkins said.
A minute later, he was ready to go. Let me pull down the window shades.
Don't bother,
Jonathan said with a broad smile. He pushed a couple of buttons next to his captain's chair. The shades came down of their own accord, and the lights dimmed.
Oh, my God, Dawkins said. You have the volume control over there, too?
Of course.
The screen blinked and danced, and then an image appeared.
Is that in a hospital?
Gale asked. The setting looked like an operating room. A cruciform table dominated the foreground, with massive lights suspended above it. In the background, a skinny, filthy man in his 20s cowered against the wall, hugging an infant.
We're not sure where this was filmed, but it looks like some kind of clinic.
We also don't know who that guy is. You'll see Craig Kendall in the frame in a few seconds after I hit play.
Y'all speak Spanish, right?
Gale said.
Digger's fluent. I can read everything, understand most. Speaking, well, I'm told I have a distinctly gringo accent.
Okay, then, Dawkins said, as he tapped his keyboard and brought the video to life. Pull your belts a little tighter and get ready for a hell of a ride.
As the door opens and closes somewhere off-screen, the man with the baby jumps at the sound and clutches the child closer.
Hello, Jose,
a voice says, still off-screen. Jose says nothing, but his face shows utter terror.
The image quality is terrific, Jonathan said. This isn't security camera footage. That's what I was expecting.
You ain't seen nothing yet, Dawkins said.
Don't look so frightened, the voice says. He enters the frame clothed in surgical scrubs, complete with a cap and mask. No gloves. I'm not going to kill you. Jose tightens his hold on the child. And little Guillermo is safe, too, the doctor asks.
That's Craig Kendall?
Gale asked. That's what we think. Personally, I'm not certain, but the prosecutor says he needs more. We're never going to see his face in this, and I don't know if you can tell, but the audio has been intentionally manipulated to alter the sound.
Actually, Kendall says, Guillermo's future is entirely in your hands. You know you have to be punished, right?
I promise I will never do it again,
Jose says in a choked voice.
And I believe you,
Kendall says. His posture is easy, conversational, nothing threatening at all.
That is why you and your family are still alive.
Nevertheless, you did steal from Mr. Cortez. That comes with a price. Jose sobs openly now. He's beyond terrified.
I am a poor man, he says. It was only a very small amount of money.
Kendall points a forefinger at him.
You should be quiet now, Jose. Words like that make me question your commitment to never steal again. The amount doesn't matter. It's about trust. Mr. Cortez trusted you, and you betrayed that trust in the most awful way.
Jose sags to the floor, sobbing.
Don't do that, Kendall says. Be a man. Be an example for your little boy. Come on, stand up.
Kendall walks to the man and places his hand under his triceps.
You can do this, Jose. I know you can.
He seems gentle, caring even. Jose works to control his emotions as he stands.
I really am sorry. So very, very sorry.
When Jose is back on his feet, Kendall takes a step back.
Take a moment, he says. Get yourself under control.
What are you going to do to me?
Kendall rubs his chin with some drama.
That depends on what you choose to do, he says. Perhaps nothing.
A glimmer of hope blooms in Jose's face.
Remember my promise to you, Kendall reminds him. I will not kill you. I will not kill anyone today. But you understand that someone needs to be punished for your crime against Mr. Cortez. So here is your choice. I can punish you, or I can punish Guillermo. Which do you want?
Jose looks stunned, as if he's been slapped.
What kind of choice is that?
An uncomfortable one, I'm sure, but it is the one you must make.
What are you going to do?
Kendall's shoulders sag, and he shakes his head.
Oh, Jose, you disappoint me. Is that really the question you want to ask? Is there a punishment you have earned that is better given to your infant son?
Jose looks trapped and ashamed, and horrified.
I meant, what will you do with Guillermo if I accept my punishment?
That clearly is a lie.
He will go out to the waiting room. He'll be well cared for. You both will be able to go home together in just a few hours.
Jose considers that and nods. Then the horror returns.
Hours,
he says, tasting the words. The surgery will last only 30 to 40 minutes, Kendall says in a soothing tone that somehow deepens the horror. Jose doesn't move for 15 seconds, maybe more. Kendall steps forward, reaches for the child.
The sooner we start, the sooner it will be over. Jose's eyes dart around the room as if hoping to find an exit. Then he kisses his boy on the top of his head and hands him over to Kendall.
You'll be nice to him?
I'll treat him as one of my own. Kendall takes the boy in his arm and gently chucks him under the chin.
You're a cute little one, aren't you?
One day your papa will tell you this story, and you will appreciate the sacrifice he made for you. He shifts his gaze to Jose. I need you to take your clothes off, please. All of them. He points off screen. You can place them over there. You'll find some electric clippers over by the floor drain. Use them to shave away your pubic hair. When you're done with all that, climb up on the table and wait. Some others will be here in a minute to help you. Kendall starts to exit, but then turns back. Remember that Guillermo will be just on the other side of the wall over there. Alone in the operating room, Jose hesitates and takes off his clothes.
This is getting hard to watch, Jonathan said. Why don't you just cut to the chase?
Because you need to know what kind of animals we're up against. I know you're focused on finding the monster's children, but you need to know how committed the monster's enemies are to bring them down.
Does this whole thing run in real time? Gale asked. Watching a terrified young man take off his clothes.
Gotcha, Dawkins said. We can fast forward to the important parts. He moved the cursor ahead 3 minutes and re-engaged the action with Jose naked and facing the far wall. His body language said that he was shaving. Two others had joined the frame, a woman and man with what might have been Asian eyes. Both wore surgical garb that hid their features, but the man had a distinct look nonetheless. A port wine stain dominated much of the space between his mask and the surgical cap. Dawkins paused the action again. We don't know who these people are either, he said, but as the recording goes on, you'll see that the male is also a doctor, and maybe the woman is, too.
Dear God, Gale said.
Dawkins continued. I'll fast forward again, and here's what you're going to miss. Jose is going to voluntarily lie down on the table and allow himself to be strapped down and an IV inserted in his arm.
I cannot imagine doing that, Jonathan said, allowing that to be done to me.
They've got his kid, Dawkins reminded. He moved his cursor up to around the 10-minute mark. You've got to see this. He clicked play. An IV line has been established, and port wine is tending to it. He attaches a syringe to a port and depresses the plunger. Jose's body seems to deflate. I know that's uncomfortable, Kendall says from the opposite side of the table. He nods to the other doctor, who moves to a spot near Jose's head. He lifts a laryngoscope and an endotracheal tube from a stainless steel tray, hyperextending the patient's neck. The attendant pulls down on Jose's mandible, inserts the scope, and follows it with the endotracheal tube. He then hooks an ambubag to the end of the tube and starts squeezing. There you go, Kendall says. That should ease things for you now that you can breathe again. Actually, we're breathing for you, through the tube. He stands close to Jose, looking down at his face, presumably so that they can see each other. That drug I just gave you is called succinylcholine, or SUX. It's a paralytic. That means that none of your muscles work anymore, so we have to breathe for you. What it doesn't do is anesthetize you. This is punishment, after all, and we want you to remember your transgressions. Kendall leaves the man with the port wine stain at Jose's head to manage his breathing and moves toward Jose's feet. He is met halfway by the female attendant who fits him with a pair of surgical gloves.
You know, anesthesia is relatively new to the surgical theater, maybe 100 years or so. Until then, all surgeries were performed on patients while they were wide awake. He speaks from a position on Jose's right side, at his hips. To the attendant, he says, "Move the light here, please."
The attendant reaches overhead and moves the light to illuminate Jose's lower abdomen and genitals. The area has been painted orange with antiseptic.
Doctors in years past employed strong men whose sole duty was to hold patients down so they wouldn't buck around while sharp instruments were inside them.
"I get it,"
Gail said, spinning her chair away from the screen.
"This is torture porn. Please turn it off."
Kendall holds out his hand and the attendant hands him a scalpel. "The sucks that I gave you does the same work as those strong men." He pulls the skin taut and lowers his scalpel. Dawkins clicked his mouse and the picture and sound went away. For the next 30 minutes, Kendall performs what's called an inguinal orchiectomy.
It's castration, Jonathan said. Jesus.
"Only on one side," Dawkins said. "And he was wide awake for all of it. Felt every cut, every tug, but he couldn't move and couldn't make a sound."
"Stop," Gail said. "For Christ's sake, just stop."
Jonathan was concerned by Gail's color. She looked ill. He didn't blame her. This was as horrific as any of the many tortures he had observed over too many years. "I'll give Kendall this, though," Dawkins said. "The man is true to his word. He let the poor bastard go after the surgery. He walked funny, but he could walk. Kendall even gave him some Tylenol and an ice pack to take home with him."
"Hell of a way to develop a badass reputation," Jonathan said, "when the penalty for an infraction is literally to have your nuts cut off, word will get around."
"Except they didn't depend on word of mouth," Dawkins said. "This video we just saw got distribution. Kendall's boss, Armand Cortez, wanted as many people as possible to see it."
"Maybe it will earn them a deeper hole in the dungeon," Jonathan said.
"There's not enough here to get him to the dungeon door," Gail said. "Unknown victim, unknown location, unknown jurisdiction, and a torturer without a face or a voice. There's no case."
As Dawkins made his way back to his seat, he explained, "We know through other sources that there's a medical enforcer in the C-Squared who's American, and he's known within the cartel as Bluebird. We have reason to believe, but cannot yet prove, that there's a female half of Bluebird, but we don't yet know what her role is."
"Bonnie to his Clyde?"
Jonathan guessed. "Maybe. We know she's out there because of a few eyewitnesses who would be out of their minds to testify." Jonathan rose from his seat and made his way to the mahogany bar. He opened a cabinet door and retrieved a bottle of Lagavulin scotch and a cut crystal Waterford tulip glass. He poured a finger of one into the other.
"Anybody?"
"White wine," Gail said.
Dawkins waved off anything. Now armed with two glasses, Jonathan made his way back to the others. He handed the wine to Gale and then sat back down in his command seat.
"So, help me piece this together,"
Jonathan said.
"We'll stipulate that your guy is our guy. He mutilates drug mules who don't pay their bills. How does this tie to nerve agents being smuggled into the U.S?"
Dawkins shrank a little into his chair. "That's where things get a little squishy. Call it intuition."
"Is that the same as a hunch?" Gail asked, drawing a smile.
"Some might see similarities," Dawkins conceded. "But my hunch comes complete with an educated guess. The guy we picked this video up from, he denies any ties with the C-Squared, and we can't find one, either. If anything, he might have ties with what's left of our friends, the Jungle Tigers, but even that is soft.
The JTs bounced back?
Jonathan asked, truly surprised. The last time he saw bits and pieces of that cartel, the leadership had been shot to bits and pieces.
Not really, Dawkins said. Not anything like they were. I think he does most of his muling for the Sinaloans or maybe Los Zetas.
Jonathan scowled. He looked to Gale, and she was scowling too.
I'm not seeing where you're taking me. You're still talking drugs. I'm talking VX.
Bluebird works for C-squared, Dawkins said, as if it were obvious. Exclusively. You don't stay alive in the business more than a few minutes if you scramble your loyalties.
Jonathan waited for him to realize he still hadn't said anything.
Yet this is where we found the threatening video, Dawkins said, with a mule who has no ties to C-squared. If the guy on the screen is Bluebird, and I'm betting my career that he is, and if he's not working for another cartel, which he wouldn't dare to do, then he must have another line of goods to trade.
Coffee?
Gale asked, clearly being deliberately obtuse. I believe it was the man next to you who emphasized once to me that which walks and quacks like a duck is likely not an ostrich, Dawkins said, dredging up one of Jonathan's favorite observations. I'm the first to concede that I might be wrong, but I really don't think that I am. Bluebird, Connie Kendall, is the link to the flow of chemical agents into the country.
This was all very interesting, Jonathan thought. Fascinating, even. How does this get us closer to Ryder and Jeffrey? Again, if they were taken as retribution, then it would be easier just to kill them.
Unless the other monsters torture in kind, Dawkins said.
Oh, please, Gale said. Don't even say that out loud.
I think this is about either squeezing information out of Connie Kendall or about keeping her quiet, Jonathan said.
As they fell silent, Jonathan took a pull on the Lagavulin, savoring the velvety smokiness.
I know what you guys think about this, Gale said after a minute. But I think we need to have a chat with Rafael Iglesias after all.